My brother and his family came to Kansas City this weekend to visit us. My brother and his wife have four children, my nephews and niece. Chase is the oldest. He's getting ready to start fourth grade. And Mallory, his sister, getting ready to start second grade. And then the twins, Jude and Levi, they're getting ready to start kindergarten. And spending time with him this weekend, I was struck by the revelation that my wife and I, we chose to have one child. Now, truthfully, pregnancy was physically difficult for my wife. And it was so difficult that after one, we decided not to try again. Pregnancy came a little easier for my sister-in-law. I would never call pregnancy easy, but she almost had my oldest nephew, Chase, by accident. She went to the hospital in her ninth month because her back was kind of hurting. And you know how first-time mothers are. I mean, every little twins, they run, you know, is everything okay? Is everything okay? She ran to the hospital. My back's hurting. Is this normal? Oh, honey, of course they checked her out. She wasn't dilated. She wasn't effaced. And they said, honey, you're fine. Go home. You'll be good. They went to get the paperwork to discharge her. In the 10 minutes it took to get it and come back, she fully dilated and effaced. He was born 10 minutes later. I mean, this kid was like coming down one of those water slides. He just shot out, just done. And maybe that was a detriment. Maybe it was too easy. Because she went back to that well a couple more times. Spending time with him, you know, several times over this weekend, my brother and I'd be sitting there, and he'd be looking at his kids, and they'd be in trouble for something, or they'd be upset about something. He'd look over at me, and he'd say, one child, huh? Watching them parent, I got to tell you, watching my brother and his wife parent is a lot like watching that circus act where the guy spins the plates on the sticks. You've seen that, right? Where they've got the sticks all lined up, and he runs back and forth, and he spins the plates, right? And just about the time he's spinning this plate, you see a plate over there that starts to wobble, and he's got to run back over to it and spin it, right? That's what it is. And there's always a lot of anticipation in that act because you keep waiting for one of those plates to fall, right? That's what watching them parent is like. I kept going, one of those plates is going to fall. Literally, one of those is going to fall. But you know, being with them, one of the things that does cross my mind from time to time is the idea of descendants. You know, my brother and his wife are probably down the road, years and years from now, probably going to have several grandkids. I mean, even if each of their kids only has one or two kids, that's like four or eight grandkids all of a sudden. And I look at my wife and I, and you know, we have one daughter. And unless she's converting to Amish, I doubt that we're going to have a big brood of grandkids. You know, probably one or two. Who knows? So sometimes I wonder, you know, maybe should we have had more children? How will my family, my physical line, if you will, how will that go on? What happens if my daughter and her husband have a conversation one day and they say, you know, we don't want to have kids? What happens then? It's something I think about. I wonder at it. I contemplate as I watch my brother and his wife spin their plates. Our scriptures today speak of a man who had conversations with God about descendants. They speak of Abram, or Abraham, as we would come to know him, a man in history that three different religions point to as an ancestor, as a beginning, as a father in faith. Abraham wanted children, but his wife, Sarah, she couldn't bear children. So he had resigned himself to being childless when one day, late in life, God came and said, listen, I'm going to give you an heir. Now Abraham and Sarah, they got impatient with God's timeline. They decided that they would take things in their own hands, literally. So Sarah had Abraham have a child with her handmaiden, a young Egyptian girl. And that union produced Ishmael, the ancestor in the Bible of the Arabic people, the man who would later form the religion of Islam. Sometime after that, still childless to this point, except for Ishmael, Abraham tells God how frustrating it is to wait on God's timeline. And that's when our scripture comes up. God takes Abraham outside, shows him the stars and the sky, and says, Ishmael will not be your heir. You and Sarah will have a child, and your descendants will be like the stars in the sky. Now, I don't know if you've ever beheld the stars on a clear night. But think about Abraham, who didn't live in a town or a city. Abraham was a very nomadic man. He lived with his tents and his servants and his children, his wife and his people out on the plains. So he walks outside where there's no lights, and he looks up in that dark night sky, and he sees literally billions of stars looking back. That's quite a promise. Your descendants will be like the stars in the night sky. Given a promise like that, you might surmise that Abraham and Sarah are going to have a whole litter of children. Maybe 10 or 15 or 20 of them, right? But they don't. They have one. Just one. Seems kind of ambitious that one offspring will lead to descendants like the night sky. Even if you count Ishmael, that's still just two. But you know, maybe their kid, maybe Isaac, maybe he's the one that's going to have the big brood. Right? Maybe he's the one that's going to have 10 or 20 children. But no, Isaac just has two. Jacob and Esau. And those two fight like cats and dogs. Must have made family reunions pleasant to be at. It isn't until Jacob that the first large family in this line really comes up. Jacob has 12 sons and a daughter. The 12 sons become the 12 heads of the tribes of Egypt. Of course, the most famous son is Joseph, he of coat of many colors. But the plan kind of seems to sputter for a while. The promise of massive numbers of descendants seems a bit off when you just have one child and that child only has two children. Don't get me wrong, it sounds like a perfectly pleasant little family. But hardly the crowd that the promise of stars in the sky or sands on the beach seems to warrant. So I begin to wonder, maybe what God and Abraham were talking about was more than physical lineage. Maybe what they were talking about was more than just family tree. Maybe it was spiritual descendants God was talking to Abraham about. Maybe he took Abraham out that night to let him know that someday the world will be changed by your faith. That is the gift that Abraham gives to his children, whether it be Ishmael or to Isaac, whether it be to his grandchildren, Jacob or Esau. The gift that Abraham gives to all of us is that gift of faith. When we read about Abraham, Abraham is the one who hears and believes. God says, you're going to have descendants like the stars in the sky. And Abraham goes, yeah, okay. God says, hey, I need to pick up everything. I need to move over to that country over there. And Abraham says, yeah, okay. Hey, now that you moved over there, I need you to move back over here. You know, okay. Hey, I need you to take that son that I promised you that you love so much, that one son, the only one you're going to get, I need you to take him out and sacrifice him. Yeah, okay. It's Abraham's faith that he passes on to his spiritual descendants. That ability to believe, that faith, that hope of things undone, that confidence of things unseen. That is what Abraham passes on to all of the heirs that come behind him. I spent this last week out at Tall Oaks at church camp. I had 10 counselors out there with me, 52 fourth and fifth graders. Out there for four nights, four very, very hot days. Did some horseback riding, shot a little archery, did some swimming, played a little gaga ball. Went on a little scavenger hunt that covered about a mile and a half of territory. Had made s'mores around the campfire, because I have to tell you, nothing takes the sweltering humidity and heat out of a July night than a nice campfire. It was like 104 degrees and we lit a fire. I love camp, though. I truly do. This is my 16th year out at Tall Oaks. I've been a counselor 6 times. I've been a chaplain once. And I've directed camp and in charge of it 11 times, both primary and junior camp. This year, I'd had such a good time that I dragged poor Francis out there with me, made him go through it. I took Eva Roebuck out there with me. Eva's been out there before. Eva's counseled for me several times in the past. And you know, I love camp. The heat and the bugs and the ticks, the beds that are just 2 inches too short for my frame, the long nights, the early morning, the homesickness, the boo-boos and the owies, all of it. Every summer, I get into storage. I pull out my camp supplies. I spend weeks going through curriculum and activities, planning events, gathering supplies, finding and training counselors like Francis and Eva. All for 4 days of sweat and exhaustion. Why? Why would I go through this every year? Why would I drag poor Francis to it? Francis came up this morning. He thought, I didn't think we're supposed to talk about camp. I said, you confused camp with Vegas. We talk about camp. Why do we do it? Why do we go out there? Why do we work with it? 52 fourth and fifth graders. I have one child. Why do I need 52 of them around? Because this week, for just a moment, we got to talk about God with 52 fourth and fifth graders. We got to learn a little bit about God. We got to explore their faith in God. For these 4 hot, humid days, amidst all the activities and the dust and the bugs, is a spiritual journey I wouldn't miss. This moment on their journeys is a moment for them. They got to talk about Ruth and Naomi and how that relationship was based on a trust in God. They got to talk about Esther and how Esther's courage allowed her to risk for her people. They got to talk about Joseph, he of coat of many colors. Years after the coat of many colors, after his brothers literally sold him into slavery, after he was thought long dead, after he'd spent time in jail, after he finally found a place in Pharaoh's court and became a very powerful man, and his brothers came groveling back in the midst of a drought and a famine, how Joseph looked on them and offered forgiveness. We got to talk about how we are all connected in faith and how we go out into the world and talk about Jesus. Now, some of them are going to go home. They're going to go back to their regular lives. They're going to forget everything we did last week. I know that. But some of them, a few of them, a couple of them, were touched by God this week. Something we talked about, something we did in worship, some prayer that was offered, some song that was sung, something somewhere touched them, opened them up to God's presence in their lives. Something was started, something was planted in their spirits. It's going to grow and thrive, not in all of them, but in some of them. In some of them this week, Jesus called out to them and they responded. That's why we do it every summer. That's why I go out and sleep in a bed that's too short, in a month that's too hot, in a place that has far too many things that crawl. Because we spent this week forming future disciples of Jesus, spiritual descendants. Have you ever thrown a rock in a pond? Doesn't matter what size rock you throw, right? It could be a tiny pebble, it could be a big boulder. You throw it in the pond, what happens? The rock hits the water and it makes ripples. No matter the size of the rock you throw, ripples go out from it that are much, much larger than the rock itself. That's what we do at camp. We're out there throwing rocks in a pond, seeing how far those ripples will go. You know, Eva Roebuck has counseled out there for me now for about the last 4 or 5 years, I think. Maybe even longer than that. Maybe 5 or 6. very first time she counseled for me out there, we had a young man in our camp named Jace Leibel. We threw a rock in his pond 5 or 6 years ago. Jace is now a member of our regional youth cabinet, and this week Jace came out to be a counselor at junior camp. When he walked into the cabin, the first thing Eva said was, "I know you. You were a camper for me once." Every day we go back out into that mission field, back out into that world. We go out through that door. And we start throwing rocks in the ponds. You are causing ripples to go out in other people's lives. The words you say, the actions you take, the steps you make, the attitudes and the moods that you convey, the smile or the frown that you choose to wear, those are all rocks. Something happens with each and every one of them. You are having an impact on your world. You are creating descendants with your daily lives. People whose journeys change because they encountered you. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? What type of descendants are you creating? What ripples are you sending out with the rocks that you choose to throw? Because Abraham heard your descendants are going to fill the sky, and so he chose to go out and have faith, to believe. And the Lord reckoned that to him as righteousness. Abraham heard that many were going to come after him, and he believed, and God said, "That's right. You have heard. You've heard about grace, forgiveness, love, hope, peace, joy, salvation, righteousness, redemption. And in just a little bit, you're going to go out. And what? What? What legacy are you creating with your faith? What descendants are you creating with your faith? What ripples are you sending out?" Abraham was one person. He had one child, and that child had two children, and our world today is completely different because of it. What spiritual descendants will come after you? Hebrews, the 11th chapter, the 12th verse says, "Therefore, from one person, and this one as good as dead, descendants were born, as many as the stars of heaven and as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore."